Thank you. Please be seated. Good morning. The court has two matters on its oral submission docket. And the order of their appearance, they are docket number 060550, New Texas Auto Auction Services versus Graciela Gomez de Hernandez from Hidalgo County and the 13th Court of Appeals District. And 060660, Medical City Dallas versus Carlisle Corporation, DBA Carlisle Syntec Systems from Dallas County in the 5th Court of Appeals District. Justice Heck is not sitting in that case. The court has allotted 20 minutes per side in each of these arguments, and we will take a brief recess between them. The proceedings are being recorded, and a link to the argument should be posted on the court's website by the end of the day today. The court is now ready to hear argument in 060550, New Texas Auto versus Graciela de Hernandez.
May it please the court, Mr. Clark and Mr. Hughes will present argument for the petitioner. The petitioners have reserved 5 minutes for rebuttal. Mr. Clark will open with the first 10 minutes, and Mr. Clark will present the rebuttal.
Please, the court. I'm going to address the strict products liability issues, and my partner, Mr. Hughes, is going to address the negligence issues during his portion. I'm going to refer to my client as Big H Auto Auction. That's the name we do business under. The name in the style is New Texas Auto Auction. Big H Auto Auction's business is providing a forum for commercial dealers to bring vehicles to our auction and sell them to other commercial dealers through our auctions. We provide auctioneering services and call bids that allow those commercial dealers to sell their vehicles to other commercial dealers. Only commercial dealers are allowed at our auctions. The general public is not permitted to sell or buy at our auctions. The vehicle involved in this case, like many others at our auction, was sold as is, which means, of course, that the seller is not making any representations about the quality or condition of the vehicle. The commercial dealers are allowed to inspect the vehicles before the auctions. Some of them bring mechanics. They can start the cars. They can test drive the cars to decide what they think about them before the auction is held.
Selling as is wouldn't make any difference for product liability.
It doesn't make a difference. The only way it makes a difference is that there's often a discussion in the case law about what the buyer's expectations are. And if a vehicle is sold as is, then there's less expectations.
Product liability covers third parties who could get harmed in an explosion.
Yes.
They wouldn't be involved in those kinds of discussions.
Yes. Yes. Vehicles in all conditions are auctioned at Big H Auto Auction. Some vehicles have to be towed across the auction block because they're in such poor shape. A vehicle could have no engine, and it could be auctioned. A vehicle could have no brakes, and it could be auctioned. That's not because we're callous about the safety risks posed by a vehicle with no brakes. It's because the commercial dealers that come to our auction understand that these vehicles are being auctioned in all kinds of conditions. Some of them will need some work before they're road-ready to be sold to the general public. There's a market for people to buy vehicles that need work, fix them up, and then sell them at a profit.
How significant is it that the auctioneer here, your client, Big H, had title to the vehicle, owned it, and sold it? Not the typical auctioneer role, but...
Right, and that's actually what makes the difference, that Big H's business is providing a service to the sellers and buyers that come to our auction. That's how we make our money. We charge a fee to the seller and the buyer for those services. Because in this one instance, due to unusual circumstances, we were very briefly on the title, that doesn't mean that our business is acquiring vehicles in our own name and we're going to sell those vehicles at a profit and we're going to make our business is going to be selling vehicles at a profit. Our business is providing auctioneering services to the sellers and buyers who come to our auctions.
Would you remind me why Big H bought it back and was in the chain of title?
I will, Your Honor. This vehicle was first auctioned on Thursday, October 12th. There was a misunderstanding about the odometer reading, and the buyer wasn't happy. So the buyer brought it back to us.
At that time, Big H did not own the vehicle.
No, we did not.
The title.
It was brought to us by a company named Memorial Finance, and they owned the vehicle. We put it through our auction, charged them our seller's fee for auctioning it off. There was a misunderstanding with regard to the odometer reading. The buyer wasn't happy. The buyer brought it back to us. Under our arbitration policy, it was decided that the seller would be allowed to keep their sale price so the seller could be happy. We would reimburse the buyer what they paid for it so that the buyer could be happy. And to facilitate putting it back to our auction, we took the vehicle back on Monday the 16th. Tuesdays is our biggest auction of the week. We auction approximately 800 vehicles on Tuesday. We took it back on Monday, put it back through the auction on Tuesday. We appeared on the title just for the purpose of facilitating it, putting it back through the auction. We took this vehicle back, put it in line with all the others that were going to be auctioned, and it was auctioned the very next day. The vehicle then passed through a couple more hands before ending up in the hands of the plaintiff. They had an accident, brought a lawsuit, which included a strict products liability claim.
So let me back you up a little bit. In answer to Justice Willett's question about Big H having title to the vehicle, whether that makes a difference, sounds like your answer is no, because that was a unique exception.
Yes, and because it's not Big H's business to acquire vehicles that we own and we're then going to sell them.
Which means it was an exception.
Yes, it was.
Not Big H's normal course of business.
Exactly.
So if Big H did that half the time or on a common basis, that would make a difference in terms of being a seller under 402A.
Yes, it would, because Section 402, which Your Honor is referencing, attaches liability to those that are engaged in the business of selling a product. If that's what you do, we have these products and we sell them and that's how we make our money, then you're subject to strict liability. The restatement makes a distinction for those that provide services that assist others in selling products, which is what Big H does.
Do the commercial auto purchasers at the auction know which vehicles are an exception, which ones Big H has title to and which ones Big H doesn't when they're put on the auction block?
I don't know if the record speaks to that. I would imagine most of them know that the way our system works is that commercial dealers bring vehicles to our auction because they're commercial dealers themselves, and they understand that. The restatement doesn't require that the buyer understand whether it's an exceptional sale or not. It focuses on under what policies and under what circumstances should we attach strict liability to a defendant. And if it's an occasional or exceptional sale outside the course of your usual business, then there's no strict liability. That's what the second restatement says, and the third restatement even is more explicit about exempting sales facilitators.
How do we analyze that? Does someone look at the financial records and or in the title records and come up to some analysis, well, this auctioneering company only takes title 20% of the time, so it's okay, or 49% of the time it's okay? What's the threshold level that the court should look at?
I don't know that you need to determine a precise percentage. Above this percentage, then we're going to say you're liable. Below, it's not. I think it's more of just the totality of the evidence about what the company's business is. And with Big H, there's no question that our main business is assisting sales by others. It's rare that we would ever be in a situation like this where our name is on the title. And Big H wasn't acting like an owner. We put our name on the title to facilitate reselling it and to provide customer service so our seller could be happy, they could keep the proceeds and wouldn't have to be disturbed. We could keep our buyer happy by reimbursing them their money. It was just to say that we were an owner really elevates form over substance. We took the vehicle back for one day and put it back to the auction the very next day. The comment to the restatement says that strict liability is going to apply to those who enter into the business of supplying human beings with products. That's not what Big H does. Big H assists others who supply products.
What do you do with the introducing into the stream of commerce language?
That alone is not the test. If someone has any role in introducing something into the stream of commerce, that's not the test. That's not the test under the restatement. That's not been the test under Texas law previously. The restatement says you have to be engaged in the business of providing a product. The third restatement is even more explicit that those who facilitate sales are not liable because they're not providing a product. They're providing a service to those that facilitate sales.
But we said in Armstrong Rubber that although it's phrased in terms of sellers, it's not necessary that the defendant actually sell the product, but only that it introduce the product into channels of commerce. And
crucial,
if you'll explain how that didn't happen here with Big H.
Because we're not supplying, our business is not supplying a product. It doesn't matter whether the form of the transaction is a sale or a lease or some other form. What matters is, are you providing the product or are you providing a service to those who provide the product? Comment G to Section 20 of the Third Restatement is clear that those that facilitate sales don't provide a product and are not subject to strict liability. It explicitly mentions auctioneers as a party that facilitates sales and thus is not going to be strictly liable. I'm going to mention, in the briefing, there's discussion of cases from several other states that have considered whether auctioneers are subject to strict liability and held that they've not. I'm going to mention just one other case because it's not in the briefing. It was decided earlier this year in Arizona. That's the Antone case. Antone versus Greater Arizona Auto Auction, and the citation is 155 Pacific 3rd, 1074. A case very much like this one, an auto auction with a strict liability claim against them. And the Arizona court decided that the auto auction was not liable because it doesn't have a special relationship with the manufacturer. You know, contrast Big H with, say, a Ford dealer. They're in regular contact with Ford. Arguably, they have some leverage with Ford about design and manufacture of vehicles. Big H is not in that position. The Arizona court also decided that the auction house was not liable because they're providing a service, not a good, as I've been saying. The fact that
so you don't think, I mean, we're here on the summary judgment, right?
Yes, there was a summary judgment.
You don't think that owning title to the vehicle for 5 days even raises a fact issue on the seller question? That it's conclusively established in your favor that Big H is not a seller?
Because it's not our business to be selling products that belong to us. This was an exceptional sale, which both the restatement and Texas case law say there's no strict liability for exceptional sales of that nature.
Is there a situation, do you think, where an auctioneer could be held strictly liable under the...
If the auction form was being used to sell products that belong to ourselves. Like, say, if I have a Ford dealership and I decide, instead of negotiating with individual customers twice a month, I'm going to have an auction, and I'm going to sell all our vehicles by auction. The fact that the form of the transaction is an auction, that's not what matters. What matters is, are you providing a product or are you providing a service that assists others who are providing the product?
So is that a yes or a no?
My answer is that an auctioneer could be liable if they're providing a product in addition to auctioning it. What's determinative is not the form of the transaction, whether it's a sale or a lease or it's an auction. It's what is the defendant's relationship to the product. Is it their product and they're making their money by providing this product, or are they just providing auction services and they're charging a fee for those services?
So the answer is that depending on what the auctioneer does, they could possibly be held strictly liable for a product defect.
In most instances, they won't, because in most instances, an auctioneer is just providing a service and charging a fee for that service. If, in fact, the auction form is being used to provide a product, that's what matters.
So if they buy them and take title and then sell them as auctioneer, that would be covered, wouldn't it?
If that's their regular business, that's how you do business, is you acquire them in your own name and then sell them. But if that's a rare one-time thing like this, then that the occasional sale doctrine applies. I'm going to yield the rest of my time to Mr. Hughes.
May it please the court, the critical problem with the negligence holding is that neither the plaintiff nor the Court of Appeals identified the correct test. Our position is the correct test is as follows, that there is no legal duty in negligence on the suppliers in the sale chain of a used product that is subject to a recall for latent defects unless the supplier has some knowledge of the recall, or if they do, then they have no reason to think that the end user or the people to whom it's supplied won't learn of the recall in the same manner. The restatement sets up the duty, Section 388. We win under that standard because we do not qualify as a supplier, as that term is used. The second, the standard does not require the supplier to fix the product. The only thing that a supplier is to do is to warn under two circumstances. One, the supplier has to have actual knowledge or have actual information that the product is subject to a risk if used as expected. And second, they must have no reason to know that the buyer or the user won't learn of it. And in this case, we established that we didn't, that the entirety of the record is that we didn't know of the recall. They failed to establish anything to the contrary. And the second is that if you believe their evidence about the media publicity about the recall, which is what they're relying on, then the same evidence shows that if we knew because we read it in the paper, which our people said they didn't, they were unaware, but if that's going to be some evidence, then it boomerangs on them because we only have to tell what we know.
Two of those points you make, though, in the summary judgment sort of contradict themselves, right? You say you didn't know, and you say it was commonly known. So which is it?
I think on the status of the record, they didn't prove that we did know because they're relying entirely on the publicity. The rule requires actual knowledge, not constructive notice. If, however, it becomes some evidence, if you were to say those newspaper reports that we didn't read were some evidence, then they become common knowledge. And I understand that the distinction, but it has to do with the rule itself. The rule says we have to have actual knowledge, not constructive notice. But then you have to turn around and say, then we have to have some reason to think the seller, pardon me, the people to whom it's supplied, won't learn of it. Well, if it's the subject of a media publicity and it's out there, then it's commonly known. And I see the red light on, so unless there are other questions, I'll ask that the summary judgment be affirmed.
Thank you, Counselor. The court is now ready to hear argument from the respondent.
May it please the court, Ms. Hamilton will present the argument for the respondent.
Please the court. No one is here for respondents today to argue that auctioneers as a general proposition should be held strictly liable. That proposition is in the ordinary situation of a traditional auctioneer that transcends plaintiff's defendant's distinctions, that enters the realm of common sense. Auctioneers are not, as a general proposition, selling products. And I want to make clear to the court, we in no way espouse that position. The problem here is, and it can be encapsulated, although not perfectly by any means, the time-honored legal maxim, bad cases make bad law. And by that I don't mean bad cases in a nefarious sense, I mean in a sense in which the facts are less than clear-cut. If this were a straightforward case of an auctioneer facing strict liability for doing no more than calling bids on used cars, the court could resolve it easily because, of course, as a general proposition, an auctioneer should not be held liable under that circumstance.
So what's the distinction here?
The distinction here, and I can tell by the court's questions, is amply put forward already, is was Big H nothing more than an auctioneer? In other words, I think we can all agree that auctioneers don't have a status immunity from civil liability. For example, prosecutors and judges basically have absolute immunity. Auctioneers don't have that. The reason you would here find a difference is that the auctioneer here owned the car. And so then the question becomes, did they own it, really own it, or was it such a transitional, ephemeral ownership that they effectively really were an auctioneer?
And that's your fact issue that would defeat the motion for summary judgment?
Correct, Your Honor.
Let me see if I can put a little finer point on your position. You're saying this generally auctioneers are not sellers under 402A. You agree with that general proposition?
I do, Your Honor.
But you say this case is different. Is this case different because you say Big H is a seller or because in this transaction Big H was a seller? Which are you arguing?
I am arguing that in this case Big H in this transaction was a seller.
So under 402A, you think an auctioneer can be a seller for some transactions and not a seller for others?
Yes, and the reason I'm smiling is because, like every attorney, I don't want to later find out I conceded my case away. But I do agree with what you're saying. And
Actually, I'm just asking you what you're saying.
I know, and I appreciate that, Your Honor. Yes, I do agree with that. One of the justices here, and I'm sorry, I don't recall which, asked, is there ever a situation where an auctioneer could be held strictly liable? And Mr. Clark amply answered that, and it brought to mind a party who's no longer a party to the case on appeal named Houston Auction. And last night I was reading some of the deposition excerpts. Houston Auction is an auction house that both sells and auctions cars. And I believe in their deposition, and it's not really pertinent, but they were delineating, say, 20% they sell, 80% they auction. That's a very different case, but that's also a different case from here. Because here, our argument is that in this case, on these facts, Big H was a seller for purposes of 402A.
How do you square that with the occasional sale exception?
And I do want to address that, Your Honor, because superficially I think that has appeal, and I'd like to delineate between two different issues there. The occasional seller exception, as I understand it, was originally envisioned to address the situation, for example, your next-door neighbor at Christmas decides to sell pies and jams. Okay? She's not a product seller. She's the lady next door that sells pies and jams. We don't want her to be subject to the product liability, strict liability apparatus the legal system envisions. And I believe that's...
Well, I mean, why wouldn't that same concept apply, though, across the board if really and truly this is just an occasional, one-time, unique sale? And my understanding is you don't really contest that they're not really in the business of taking title.
No, that I do contest. I'm sorry, Your Honor. I have not been clear in that respect. In this case, if you back up in time, and this goes to the occasional seller issue, they are not an occasional seller in the sense I've just described, the pie jam example. So then the question is, if they normally auction and they almost never sell cars, are they an occasional seller? And what that really goes to is, are they a seller at all? Or is this just a one-time situation where title was basically passed so they could auction the car, and that's some of the cases they rely on? Well, no, that's not the case. Here, they were involved in a situation where they set back the odometer on a vehicle. And so an arbitrator was called in. And instead of the person who had sold the car originally, the arbitrator said, no, Big H, you have to take back this car because you reset the odometer. Therefore, you own it, and now you are going to sell it. That was an arbitration policy, and this is from their own briefing. Obviously, that is a scenario that is a regular part of their business. There are arbitrations.
Did they profit from the product sale separate and apart from the auction fee?
There's no, as I recall, and I'm sure counsel will clarify this, but as I recall, there's no evidence about profit per se. As I recall,
you agree that could be relevant if they made no profit from the sale of the product and their profit was simply related to their typical auction fee? Would that be a factor that would be important in determining?
Yeah, I think it would, Your Honor. And again, I'd like to stand back and just remind the court that this is a summary judgment. And there was only one no evidence point, and that was on the expert evidence issue. So they move for summary judgment. So if they want to say we're wearing our auctioneer hat, then I think the evidence they need to put forward, let's just pretend we didn't even respond. The evidence they would need to put forward is we are only auctioneers. And then our burden would be to provide some evidence that's legally sufficient to support a jury question. And so then the question becomes, have they established that they're an occasional seller as a matter of law simply by saying we're auctioneers? Well, I would argue no, just on their own evidence, because they've established they had title, and that it wasn't, as in the cases they've relied upon, where title was given to the auctioneer only to facilitate the auction. Rather, title was imposed upon them because of their own conduct, and it was their car. And if they did not sell it at auction, they suffered a loss because they now had a car they did not have before.
Well, but they're taking the title had nothing to do with what happened in this case.
You mean in terms of the sales?
Right, I mean, the odometer reading had nothing to do with the tire. And so it strikes me that you have a situation where, as you say, typically an auctioneer would not be introducing products into the stream of commerce. And had the odometer issue not come up, we wouldn't be here. But through the fortuitous occasion of the odometer matter, they would never have held title at all. So why should that have any effect at all in this analysis?
Oh, because, and with all due respect, I disagree. It's not fortuitous. I mean, they absolutely owned the car. This was not a situation where someone came to them and said, I want you to auction my car, and they said,
well, I know, but from what I gather, it's sort of an internal arbitration procedure that allowed the buyer in that instance to get the car back to the auctioneer.
Correct.
To resolve that dispute.
Correct.
But none of that had anything to do with what happened in the case.
Not directly, no, Your Honor, but with all due respect, I think it did have to do with the case in that the arbitrator didn't say, give the car back to the original seller. The arbitrator said, it's going to the auctioneer. The auctioneer now owns this vehicle.
But the purpose behind that requirement,
yes,
is, you know, if you're going to introduce products into the stream of commerce, there's some presumption that you have the ability to affect the design of the product. In other words, a dealer who has to return cars or has a problem with cars can have some effect on the manufacturing specifications, design features, some input. And I think it's fairly clear that the reason behind the occasional sale doctrine is someone who bakes pies or jams or occasionally takes title for an accommodation to a customer doesn't have the ability to influence the design of the product. I mean, where is the purpose behind this exception served by your argument?
I understand completely the court's concern, and what I would say is that here they were not an occasional seller in, and I'm not trying to evade the court's question. They were not an occasional seller in that sense that they had no ability to impact the manufacturer because, for example, and I am going to read now to the court from, if I forget my reading glasses on, from the petition, this is from their petition where they admit they are dealers. This is from the Texas Transportation Code. A licensed auto auctioneer does not engage in business as a dealer by selling vehicles at auction if title does not pass to the auctioneer for an auction of a vehicle owned by a licensed person. Under the statute, they are dealers.
Well, but again, it gets back to the occasional sale doctrine. If they're a dealer in only a minor fraction of cases, then you're right back to the question of not having influence over the design.
I understand what the court is saying, but this was a summary judgment, and we put forward evidence that at least in this instance, they did sell a car. They were a dealer. They
so
did have a title.
If a bank repossesses the car, they take title. Are they seller liable to product liability if the tires are no good?
Again, in the record that I was looking at last night, I was reminded that there are banks that do that. There are even banks that have separate auction house arms. It depends on the transaction. It depends.
It's hard to imagine a bank repo is one who sells a seller is engaged in the business of selling cars.
No, again, as I began today, as a general proposition, no, I don't agree
but
with
they
it.
Would take title. I mean, that's what a repo is.
Yes.
Take title.
That's correct, Your Honor.
So how are we going to distinguish them? If you're correct in this case, then the banks are going to be liable for car rollovers when they repo a bank and sell it to somebody at an auction.
The distinction I would make between the bank repo company and a company like Big H is that Big H sells thousands of cars every week.
Okay,
two dealers,
so an
four
auto,
dealers.
How about an auto repair place? An auto repair place, auto repairman has a lien on the auto if you don't pay the repair bills. Now, they have a lot of cars that pass through there, but they're not really in the business of selling cars. They're in the business of repairing cars.
Yes.
And so if they repo cars and then unload them, then they're also a product liability seller. They become, because they take title, they're in the business of selling a product.
I think the statute, it's either 82.00 or 83.00, it talks about to be liable, you have to be a seller engaged in the business of selling cars. I would say on the limited text you give me, that's not the business of selling cars. Here, Big H quintessentially, at least in terms
but
of raising
seems,
a
but it seems to me if the difference is, well, banks and repair car places aren't selling cars, but an auctioneer is, that contradicts your argument that auctioneers normally aren't in the business. Because now you're arguing, well, but they really are.
I understand what the court is saying, and I have grappled with how to express this, and I obviously have not done a good job of it, but it goes back to the occasional...
Well, we're dealing with a statute that doesn't explain all these, our restatement and general principles that don't explain these things, but...
Because I think the evidence to show whether or not you're a seller is different from the evidence to show whether you are in the business of selling cars. These guys sell cars all day, every day. Now, the difference is when they act as auctioneers, they aren't selling their own cars. They're selling someone else's cars. But so there's two issues here. One is, were they a seller? And I think, yes. The question then becomes, were they an occasional seller? And you were asking me what's relevant in determining whether someone is an occasional seller. Well, I'd say here, given that they have an arbitration process in place that requires them periodically to take cars back and sell them, that they did that here, that it was very much a car that they owned. It was not an ephemeral transaction of title simply to facilitate an auction. That there's at least a fact question, that they had a burden to establish with legally sufficient evidence that they were not an occasional seller.
So the one fact that keeps, you believe, petitioners from winning summary judgment is that Big H had title to the car for 5 days.
I wouldn't say that's the one fact, but that is a very critical fact.
Now, you've gone back to your point about being in the business of selling. You say Big H sells 1,000 cars typically a week, which Big H says too.
Yes.
When we're looking at the restatement provision in our statute here in Texas about being engaged in the business of distributing or placing in the stream of commerce a product, if you read cases around the country, the purpose of making persons who are in the business of distributing products sellers and subject to strict liability is that, as was alluded to earlier, these businesses develop some expertise in the product gain the ability to influence the design and the safety and manufacturing of the product, that type of thing. What's the evidence here that Big H was not just a conduit and didn't develop any expertise in autos? They didn't repair them, didn't make warranties on them. That's what Big H says. What's the evidence that they developed some expertise in cars rather than just being a pass-through?
Well, for what it's worth, Big H does repair cars. It does modify them. It has a level. This is in the deposition excerpts that were attached to the summary judgment. It does make modifications to cars. It has a green-yellow red light system that goes, I believe, to the as-is issue, but rolled into the as-is is, for example, they will have cars that literally are towed on the block to be sold. They have other cars that they fix. Also in the deposition excerpts, they deal extensively with dealers. In fact, I believe the Houston auction deponent, whose deposition was attached, said that he didn't even like to go to Big H auctions because they were so dominated by dealers. So they do have, if what the court is asking me, is there evidence of their interplay with the system of the stream of commerce such that they could affect design, that they could affect the information the final consumer receives, the two ends of the transaction, from the beginning design to the end user. Yes, there's some evidence. It's certainly not overwhelming. We would not win a summary judgment as a matter of law, but there is evidence in the record there.
As I interpret Big H's briefing, it says, to the extent there's any warranty or information about the vehicles, it only conveys that from the entity that is selling the car, that it doesn't make separate warranties or do separate inspection of the vehicles. And the lighting system only is intended to convey the information that Big H gets from the seller when it puts the car up on the block. It sounds like you're suggesting that Big H obtained that information by its own inspection or due diligence in looking at the vehicle. Is that in the evidence?
I don't want to mislead the court about that. I was looking at last night. I believe it does conduct its own inspection, but I will, if the court will accept a letter brief, I'll verify that because I don't want to overstate that, and I'm sure defense counsel will correct me if I'm wrong. But, you know, it's interesting that you brought that up because that's right. In this case, they made an express warranty because they were the seller. I mean, that is another thing they did in this case, because they themselves say that that we convey the warranties and the representations of the seller, well, they were the seller here.
Does the record have any indication how frequently or infrequently Big H takes back cars and acquires title, however fleetingly, but there's nothing about that in the record?
Again, as I recall, there is no evidence either way and the record to that effect, Your Honor.
What was the form of the title in Big H? I mean, you say that the fact that they held title creates the fact issue that would defeat right. summary judgment. Was it a certificate of title? Was it just they agreed that they would hold title from the previous buyer? Do you know?
It was a formal certificate of title. I was looking
at it. Would it have made any difference?
It's kind of hard to read, but there's a series that goes, I think, it goes someone, I think, memorial, auto advantage, and then back to them.
Okay. So it was in a formal certificate of title?
Yes, it was.
Would it have mattered whether it was actual certificate of title or just some agreement to take the title back?
Would it have mattered? It would have mattered to the extent that it's indicia of ownership. I come back to the two cases defense counsel cited in other jurisdictions where auctioneers were not held liable, even though they held title. However, there was evidence in those cases that they held the title solely for the purpose of the auction, whereas here title was held not solely for the purpose of the auction, but because they actually owned the vehicle. If the court has no further questions, I think I'll yield the remainder of my time.
Thank you very much, Counsel.
Thank you, Your Honor.
The court will hear rebuttal.
Our business is selling services, not cars.
What's the record evidence on that? Was there conclusive summary judgment evidence as to what percentage of your sales are reflected in this type of transaction?
That degree of specificity or a specific number of percentage, no. But our representative at her deposition was asked about that, and her testimony was that but for these rare circumstances, we would never be on the title for a vehicle.
The world wouldn't collapse if you had to get insurance for this kind of liability. You could just roll it into your fees, right?
But there's a possibility that adding that to our fees would take out the margin that allows our business to function. This vehicle was sold to two more parties before it got to the final consumer. Our business and our market functions because we do these things, 800 vehicles in one day. If they're interested, they can inspect them before. If we have to ensure that every vehicle is roadworthy, then that business can't continue as it does. And we can't sell vehicles that need to be fixed.
But the idea of product liability is businesses need to spread the risk. And between some injured third party when something blows up and everybody that was in the chain of commerce, y'all need to be the ones that bear the risk of that, not the bystander. And if your business can't bear that, then maybe we don't need that product. I mean, that was the whole, right or wrong, that's where product liability came from. And that could apply here.
And that could apply to any number of parties that have some remote connection to a vehicle. If you look at the cases in other jurisdictions that hold auctioneers are not liable, that's frequently considered, and those cases uniformly hold that factor alone will not make you strictly liable, especially when you're not engaged in the business of providing the product. And also when it's an occasional sale for you, that factor alone is not going to make you liable. And that is a particular problem for our business because we're selling some vehicles that are not fit to be driven on the road. We couldn't do that if we had liability for any defect.
What is the summary judgment evidence as to how often Big H inspects the vehicles?
We will do an inspection if it's requested by a customer and charge a fee for that inspection. It is not something that's done routinely.
What about repairs? There's some assertion that perhaps they do repairs and there's a red, yellow, green light. What's the response to all that?
I honestly don't recall whether we would do repair services. Certainly not a big part of our business. The issue about the yellow, green, and red light, this vehicle was sold under a red light, which means, as is, no representations. A green light or a yellow light would convey something different about the seller's representations about the quality or the condition of the vehicle.
Would it make a difference if the auctioneer company was involved in repairing these vehicles even so slightly?
I don't see how it would because, again, you're just providing a service. Maybe someone brings a car to you and they want you to do some repair work and then sell it for them. That's just another service that you're providing. That doesn't mean that you're providing the product. And repair shops are not strictly liable because they touched a vehicle that later was sold.
They don't take title to it.
Yes. And obviously, in this instance, us appearing on the title was something done for convenience. To the extent that we might be considered an owner, it's an occasional sale for us. You know, I was thinking someone could have a tow truck company and they have tow trucks, and after a while they want to sell their tow trucks. Well, that's obviously, they're not in the business of selling tow trucks, so that's an exceptional sale for them. Big H might have tow trucks that they use on their lot. If Big H puts one of their tow trucks through the auction, does that mean that Big H is going to be liable? But if a tow truck company sells theirs, they're not. The restatement says one of the examples of who's not strictly liable is someone who sells a used car to a dealer, because you're not in the business of selling used cars. And I want to just, I think Justice O'Neill had some questions about this transaction that I wanted to clear up. When this vehicle was first auctioned, and it belonged to Memorial Finance, we charged the seller a fee of $140. We charged the buyer a fee of $90. When we had to take it back and put it back through our auction again, it sold for a lower price. Big H suffered a loss of $900 on that second sale. So we didn't profit at all on this. And that just also goes to show that this can't be our regular business, because when something like this happens, we lose money. We make our money by charging for our services.
Is that in the summary judgment?
It is, Your Honor, yes. Yes, those numbers are in the summary judgment evidence. And we didn't roll back the odometer. There was some misunderstanding about it, but it's not because Big H did something that would roll on back the odometer. We generally don't touch the vehicles to that degree. So I'd ask that the opinion of the Court of Appeals be reversed and the summary judgment be affirmed.
Any further questions?
Thank you, Counselor. The cause is submitted, and the court will take a brief recess.
All right.